fools for going to Christian meeting and bearing your burdens meek and lowly. What get you for it? What does it profit you? Ought to get better gods like some of the folks in the Indies, gods that bring you good fishing in return for your sacrifices, and it really answer folks' prayers. Laugh, damn ye. There be an island east of Okathite where there be stone ruins older than anybody knows. Ruins all wore away like they've been under the sea once, with pictures of awful monsters all over them. The natives around there has all the fish they can catch, and sports bracelets and armlets and head rigs made out of a queer kind of gold and covered with pictures of monsters, just like the ones carved over the ruins. Sort of fish-like frogs, or frog-like fishes drawn like they was a human beings. Nobody knows where they got all this stuff, nor how they manages to find fish in plenty, even when the very next island's got lean pickings. But I knows. Damn your eyes! Obed Marsh knows!
And how did he know, Mr. Allen?
Nobody ever believes me now when I tell them. And I don't suppose you will, young fella. Though, come to look at you have got kind of them sharp reading eyes like Obed Marsh had. Oh, Obed, he got the truth out of them heathen. And he learned that these things on this earth as most folks never heard. It seems these islanders were sacrificing heaps of their young men and maidens to some kind of god things that lived under the sea and getting all kinds of favor in return. What they done to the victims, well, ain't for me to say. And I guess Obed wa'n't none too sharp about asking. What the things agreed to give in return was plenty of fish druv in from all over the sea, and a few gold-like things now and then. Now that was at first, but them frogfish things wanted more.
More?
Yeah. After a while, sacrifices weren't enough for 'em. The things started hankering after mixing with the folks and having giant ceremonies on the big days, Maeve and Halloween. The islanders kind of balked when it came to mating with them toad-like fishes, but finally they learnt something that's put a new face on the matter. Them things told them that if they mixed bloods, there'd be children as they'd look human at first, but later turn more and more like the things down there. And this is the important part, young fella. Them as turned into fish things and went into the water wouldn't never die. Them things never died except they was kilt violent. Well, sir, by the time Obed knowed them islanders, they was all full of fish blood from the deep water things. They thought what they got was well worth all they'd had to give up. And I guess Obed kind of thought the same himself, because they showed him a lot of rites and incantations as had to do with them sea things. In the end, they gave him a funny thingamajig made out of lead or something that'd bring him up. The idea was to drop it down to water with the right prayers and such. The things were scattered all over the world, so as anybody that looked about could find a nest and bring them out if they was wanted.
Did he ever use that knowledge?
Ah, yeah, that'd be good. What? Oh, no, not then. The captain was sharp for gain and found he could get them gold-like things so cheap it'd pay him to make a specialty of them. Things went on that way for years, and Obed started up the refinery in town. You see, he didn't dare sell the pieces like they was. The folks would be all the time asking questions. Well, all the same, his crew would get a piece and dispose of it now and then, even though they was swore to keep quiet.
The Marsh TR.
Ah, yeah. That caused a bit of commotion, that did. But that was after. After it all happened.
After what happened, Mr.
I'm Allen? Getting to it, young fella. Well, come about 1838, when I was 7 years old, Obed, he went to them islands one last time.
Wiped out. All them island people, every man, woman, and child, all wiped out between voyages. The other islanders must have got wind of what was going on. Pious cusses. Didn't leave nothing standing except what parts of the ruins is too big to knock down. No trace of no gold-like things, and none of the nearby folks that breathe a word about the matter won't even admit there's ever been people on that island. Lost. All of it lost. Damn their eyes! Damn their eyes!
Well, that naturally hit Obed pretty hard, seeing as his normal trade was doing very poor. Most of the folks around town took the hard times kind of sheep-like and resigned. Oh, they was in bad shape because the fishing was petering out and the mills weren't doing none too well. I think that may have been what set Obed a-raging and made him do what he did.
Ye be sheep. That's what ye be. Dull, stupid sheep a-moaning and a-praying to a Christian heaven that didn't help ye none. Well, ye can take your crosses and your holy books and be damned. I knows of folks as prays to God that gives something you really need. And I says, if a good bunch of men stand by me, I can maybe get a holt of certain powers as it bring plenty of fish and quite a bit of gold. There'll be more on the sea than just what you can catch in nets. There'll be powers. Powers in the sea.
Of course. Them as served on the Sumatra Queen and seed the island knowed what he meant. But them as didn't got kind of swayed by what Obed had to say and begun to ask him what he could do to set him on the way to a faith as it'd bring him results. Well, Obed set on the preachers first. They run the congregational parson out of town and the Methodist fella quit. Never did see resolved Babcock, the Baptist parson, again. But they fought till they was all gone. Wrath of Jehovah. I was a mighty little critter, but I heard what I heard. I heard what I heard.
Dagon and Ashtoreth are their names.
Yeah.
Belial and Beelzebub are their lieutenants.
Through Fathan.
The golden calf and the idols of Canaan are their abominations.
Yeah.
Meaning.
Tickle. Person.
Yeah.
Meaning.
God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it.
Yeah.
Tickle.
Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting.
Thulu.
Paris.
Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians.
Yeah. Rilia. Thulu. Patan. Yeah.
That's crazy, Mr. Allen. Monstrous. It couldn't have happened that way.
Don't believe me, hey? Then just tell me, young fella, why Captain Obed and some 20 other folks used to row out the Devil Reef in the dead of night and chant things. You could hear them all over town where the wind was right. And tell me why Obed was always dropping heavy things down the hut of the side of the reef where the bottom shoots down like a cliff. Tell me what he'd done with that funny-shaped lead thingamajig as the islanders give him. Hey, boy! And why'd the new church parsons wear them queer robes and cover themselves with them gold-like things Obed brung, hey?
I don't know.
You're beginning to see, eh? Maybe it'd like to have been me in them days, watching out to sea from the cupola top of my house. Suppose one night you seed something heavy heaved off an Obed's dory beyond the reef. And then learn next day a young fella was missing from home, eh? Did anyone ever see hide or hair of Hiram Gilman again? Did they? And Nick Pierce? And Llewelly Waite? And Adam Iron Southwick and Henry Garrison, eh? Anyways, that was the time Obed begun to get on his feet again. Other folks was prospering too. Fish begun to swarm into the harbor, fit to kill. Some Kingsport fishermen heard about the catch and come up in sloops, but was all lost. Nobody never seen him again. Remember, I ain't saying Obed was set on having things just like they was on that island. I don't think he aimed to do no mixing, nor raise no young'uns to take to the water. He was just willing to pay heavy for them gold things And I guess the others were satisfied. For a while.
For a while, Mr. Allen?
Come in, 46. The town done some looking and thinking for itself. It was Selectman Mallory that set it off, that got the town so riled up finally.
It's done gone on too long. There's been too many folks missing, and not a family in Innsmouth has not got an empty bed.
That's right.
There's been not too much wild preaching in meeting on a Sunday. Too much talking that ain't in the book.
That's true. Dagon.
You all know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that be over now. The decent folk of this town have took it back. Last night, a party followed Captain Mobet's crowd back to the reef. That were the shots you all heard betwixt the doors. We got them all, yes, sir. What? We got Obed and 32 others in the gold right now. Everything under control, just head on your homes and we'll take care of it for you.
So we all went home with everybody a-wondering just what was afoot and just what charge again the selectmen could get to hold. God, if anybody'd looked ahead. A couple of weeks later, when nothing had been thrown into the sea for that long... That awful night... I seed 'em. I was up in the cupola. Hordes of 'em. Swarms of 'em. All over the reef and swimming up the harbor into the Minooksett. God, what happened in the streets of Innsmouth that night? They rattled our door, but Pa wouldn't open.
What?
Then he clumb out the kitchen window with his musket to find Selectman Mallory and see what he could do. Mounds of the dead and the dying. Shots and screams. Shouting in Old Square and Town Square and New Church Green. Jail thrown open. Proclamation. Treason. Called it the plague when folks came in and found half our people missing. Nobody left. But them is a jine in with Obed and them things. Or else keep quiet. Never hear to my pa no more. Good morning. Everything cleaned up. But they was traces. Obed, he kind of took charge. He was right far gone then, Obed was.
Now, hear me. There's things as are gonna be changed. Others will worship with us at meeting time, and certain houses has got to entertain. Guest, them from the sea wants to mix with folks like they're done in the South Seas, and I, for one, didn't feel bound to stop them. They brung us fish and treasure, and should have what they hankered after. Nothing'll be different on the outside, only you'll keep shy of strangers if you knows what's good for you. Them as would help, special, would get special rewards, gold and such. No use balking, for there was millions of them down there. You seed that last night. Yield up enough sacrifices, and savage knick-knacks and harborage in the town when they wanted it, and they'd let well enough alone. All in the band of the faithful, the order of Dagon, and the children should never die, but go back to the mother Hydra and father Dagon, what we all come from once. Yeah! Yeah! Cthulhu Patan!
Yeah! Yeah! Cthulhu Patan!
Fingli Morgna Cthulhu!
Fingli Morgna Cthulhu!
Re-ya-wag-na-patan!
Re-ya-wag-na-patan!
Re-ya! 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 Cthulhu! Patan! Ya! 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 Re-ya! Cthulhu! Patan! Ya! Ya!
So, that was the great epidemic of 1846.
God. What I seen since I was 15 year old. Many, many take the powers of God what I seen. They'd have killed me long ago for what I know. Only I took the first and second oaths of Dagon off in Obed, so I'd be protected. Unless in a jury I've improved I told things knowing and deliberate. But I wouldn't take the third oath. I'd have died rather than take that. It was around Civil War time when children born since 46 begun to grow up. Some of them, that is. I see him swimming in and out of the river from that cursed reef of Satan, and I see more and more attic windows getting boarded up.
But surely, if this were all true, people from the outside of Innsmouth would have noticed, would have done something.
Well, sir, that be the beauty of it. Nobody will believe nothing. Folks outside call them gold-like things pirate loot, and allow as how Innsmouth folks has fur and blood or is distempered or something. Besides, them that lives here shoes off as many strangers as they can. Used to be right bad with horses. Beasts would balk at the critters. Horses worse than mules. But when they got automobiles, well, that was all right.
And Obed Marsh got away with all of this. Didn't anyone try and do something about him?
Oh, yeah. Someone did do something about him, just not who'd you expect. In 46, Captain Obed took a second wife that nobody in the town never see. Some says he didn't want to, but was made to by them as he'd called in. Had three children by her. Two has disappeared young, but one gal has looked like anybody else and was educated in Europe. Obed finally got her married off by a trick to an Arkham fella as didn't suspect nothing. But nobody outside will have nothing to do with Innsmouth folks now. Obed, he died in 78. Barnabas Marsh, that runs the refinery now, is Obed's grandson. He's about changed. Can't shut his eyes no more and is all out of shape. Ain't been seen about in public a nigh on 10 year. Married a poor little Ipswich gal. Hey, you. Why don't you say something? How'd you like to be living here in a town like this? With everything a-rotten and a-dying and boarded up monsters crawling and bleating and barking and hopping around black cellars and attics everywhere you turn, hey? How'd you like to hear the howling night after night from the churches and Order of Dagon Hall and know what's doing part of the howling? How'd you like to hear what comes from that awful reef every May Eve and Hallowmas, hey? Curse you! Don't sit there a-staring at me with them eyes! I tell Obed Marsh he's in hell, and he's got to stay there! In hell, I says, can't get me! I ain't done nothing, nor told nobody nothing.
That's not true anymore, Mr. Allen.
Huh?
You've told me.
You, young fella. Hell, I ain't told you nothing yet. You just sit still and listen to me, boy. This is what I ain't never told nobody. I says I didn't do no prying after that night, but I found things out just the same.
Did you hear something?
Want to know what the real horror is, hey?
I thought I heard something.
Well, it's this. It ain't what them fish devils has done, but what they're a-gone to do. They're a-bringing things up out of the sea, been doing it for years. Them houses north of the river between Mortar and Main Streets is full of them. Them devils and what they brung. And when they get ready, I say, when they get ready... You ever hear tell of a Shoggoth? Hey, you hear me? I tell you, I know what them things be. I seen them one night.
There is something out there.
Huh?
Out there on the beach. Can't you hear it?
Get out of here.
What?
Get out of here! They seen us! Get out for your life! Don't wait for nothing!
But what about you?
They know now! It don't matter no more. Run for it, quick! Out of this town, run! Run, that you hold me! Many, take a poison! Yarina! Cthulhu Fatan!
When I reached Water Street, I paused in my panic and looked back towards the sea. There was no remaining trace of Zedek Allen. I can hardly describe the mood in which I was left by this harrowing episode. An episode at once mad and pitiful, grotesque and terrifying. The grocery boy had prepared me for it, yet the reality left me nonetheless bewildered and disturbed. Puerile though the story was, old Zadok's insane earnestness and horror had communicated to me a mounting unrest, which joined with my earlier sense of loathing for the town and its blight of intangible shadows. What had I heard, dragging along the sand, and what had happened to Zadok Allen? There in the dying light on that grimy beach, I had seen and heard enough in shadow-haunted Innsmouth. I hurried back to the hotel in the now eagerly awaited bus. There was something very disturbing about the square when I reached it. It seemed as if all the loiterers in town were congregated around the door of the Gilman house. It seemed as if many bulging, watery, unwinking eyes looked oddly at me as I claimed my valise in the lobby, and I hoped that none of these unpleasant creatures would be my fellow passengers on the coach. And then I was again face to face with Joe Gentry, the owner and operator of that disreputable vehicle.
Afraid I got some bad news for you, sir. There be something wrong with the engine. Needs repair bad. Nearly left us stranded in the middle of the road just outside of town.
Well, what? Can it be repaired?
Hey, problem be, it's gonna take some time, Zoll. Gotta pull that engine out and break her down. All night job.
But I've got to get to Arkham. I can't afford to stay the night in Innsmouth.
It ain't no problem, sir. It be taken care of.
What's this?
Tain't your fault you be stuck in Innsmouth. Figured I'd make it up to you. That be a key to the best room in the Gilman house. Compliments of Joe Gentry. Ye just get a good night's sleep and see if when we don't have ye out of here bright and early tomorrow, sir. Just see if when we don't.
So I turned and walked into that unwholesome-looking building, aware of the unblinking eyes that watched my progress, and even more aware of the fact that Gentry's bus had sounded no different when it had pulled up than it had during my previous journey on board it.
Here ye be, sir. Room 428, best in a Gilman. Two windows, a nice view of the town, a good sea air coming in. A bath be down the hall, last door on the left.
There's no inside bolt on this door.
Yeah, the inside bolt broke off a while back. Gotta fix it one of these days. The key lock works, though. Enjoy your stay, sir.
I dropped a coin into the clerk's unbelievably thick, clumsy hands, and he shuffled out of the room. The room was a dismal one with bare, cheap furnishings and the two previously mentioned windows. It was permeated with the lethal mustiness that blended hideously with the town's general fishy odor and plunged my mind even deeper into thoughts of death and decay.
How you like to be living in a town like this? With everything a-rotten and dying and boarded-up monsters crawling and bleating and barking and hopping around black cellars and attics every way you turn.
I found myself at the windows, looking out over a dingy courtyard otherwise hemmed in by low, deserted brick blocks, and beyond, a view of decrepit westward-stretching roof with the marshy countryside beyond. There was a trace of an abandoned railway, and a deepening gloom that seemed to settle into my very soul.
How'd you like to hear the howling night after night from the churches in Order of Dagon Hall, and know what's doing part of the howling?
In that dark and hateful room, the whispers and legends of Innsmouth begin to take on a new and frightening reality. I finally felt compelled to do something about it. I took the 3-in-1 device on my keyring and transferred the bolt from my wardrobe to the door.
How'd you like to hear what comes from that awful reef every May Eve and Hallowmas, hey? Think the old man's crazy, hey? Well, sir, let me tell you, that ain't the worst.
And then I pushed the bureau in front of it.
That ain't the worst. That ain't the worst. That ain't the worst.
Then I was awoken from a fitful slumber by the sound of footsteps outside my room. And there came that soft, damnably unmistakable sound, which seemed like a malignant fulfillment of all my apprehensions. Without the least shadow of a doubt, the lock of my door was being tried, cautiously, furtively, tentatively, with a key. And then I was out of bed, my trembling hands questing hungrily for the curtains that covered the grimy windows. The readiness with which I fell into a plan of action proved that I must have been subconsciously fearing some menace and considering possible avenues of escape for hours. I ripped the ancient vellum drapes from the windows and began to tie them into strips. And then I had the window open and was throwing my improvised ladder out. The sick, fishy odor of Innsmouth flooded past me as I worked to secure one end to the bed. Finally, I was ready, and swinging out of the window and down that rotting rope, I left behind me forever the morbid and horror-infested fabric of the Gilman house, and not a moment too soon. I landed safely on the loose, grass-grown cobblestones of the street and fled across them to the dubious sanctuary of a ruined Payne Street doorway. As I did, I looked to the north and saw lights blazing ominously from the Order of Dagon Hall and the Baptist and Congregationalist churches. I hid, gasping from exertion and terror. Then the door of the Gilman house burst open, and a large crowd of doubtful shapes poured forth, lanterns bobbing in the darkness and horrible creaking voices exchanging low cries in what was certainly not English. I recognize the now familiar shape of Joe Gentry gesturing wildly into the night, apparently giving orders to the shambling horde, and behind him I perceive that one figure was strangely robed and unmistakably surmounted by a tall tiara. I turned and ran deeper into the diseased shadows of Innsmouth. The night was alive with alarms and guttural cries. All the roads out of town seemed to be blocked. Affecting the distinctive Innsmouth shuffle, I made my way along South Street to the sea. Far beyond the breakwater was the dim, dark line of Devil Reef. And as I glimpsed it, I saw intermittent flashes of light on its low outline. I looked back at the town and saw answering flashes from the lofty cupola of the Gilman House. For a moment, I stood there transfixed and watched the cynical, flashing of those nameless, unexplained beacons. And then I was off and running south, past the yawning black doorways and fishily staring windows of the deserted nightmare buildings. For at a close glance, I saw that the moonlight waters between the reef and the shore were far from empty. They were alive, with a teeming horde of shapes swimming inward towards the town. And even at my vast distance and in my single moment of perception, I could tell that the bobbing heads and flailing arms were alien and abhorrent. The deep ones were hurrying to the hunt. I ran. My only hope lay to the north, to the long-abandoned railway trestle that led to Raleigh in safety. It was just possible that the mob would not look for me there. It was a briar-choked desolation, nearly impassable. I hugged the crumbling walls and collapsing doorways of Innsmouth as my hunters ran and hopped past me, their very numbers hiding me as well in the shadows. Too many of them wore voluminous robes and at least one a peaked diadem that glistened whitely in the moonlight. At last, I reached the trestle and began to make my way cautiously across it. It was rotting and in several places had collapsed altogether, but I finally made my way to the other side and glanced back the way I had came. The ancient spires and roofs of decayed Innsmouth gleamed lovely and ethereal in the magic yellow moonlight, and I thought how they must have looked in the old days before the shadow fell. And then that beautiful image was shattered by what I saw marching for the town from the sea. My other pursuers had been accursedly abnormal. These had no hint of the normal about them at all. They came in an endless stream, flopping, hopping, croaking, bleeding, surging inhumanly through the spectral moonlight in a grotesque, malignant saraband. And some of them had tall tiaras of whitish gold metal, and some were strangely robed, and one who led the way was clad in a ghoulish, humped black coat and striped trousers and a man's felt hat perched on the shapeless thing that was his head. I think the predominant color was a grayish-green, though they had white bellies. They were mostly shiny and slippery, the ridges of their backs were scaly. Their heads were the heads of fish with prodigious bulging eyes that never closed. At the sides of their necks were palpitating gills, and their long paws were webbed. They hopped irregularly, sometimes on two legs, sometimes on four. Their croaking, braying voices, clearly used for articulate speech, held all the dark shades of expression their staring faces lacked. They were the blasphemous fish frogs of the nameless design, living and horrible. Their number was a limitless swarm past guessing. They were still streaming past when they were finally blotted out by my own unconsciousness. I awoke the next day in the brush-grown railroad cut, and when I staggered out to the road ahead, I saw no trace of any footprints of any kind at all. A gentle evening rain, apparently, had obliterated them. The fishy odor, too, was gone. Innsmouth's toppling staples and ruined rooftops loomed grayly towards the southeast, but not a living creature did I see. The reality of my experience was uncertain in my mind, but I felt some horrible truth lay behind it. Accordingly, I found my way to the neighboring town of Raleigh, where I got a meal and bought some presentable clothes. I caught the night train to Arkham, and the next day talked long and earnestly with government officials there, a process I repeated in Boston. My story was greeted with stern skepticism, but the G-men took careful notes, and several exchanged nervous whispers among themselves when they thought I wasn't looking. I gave up the balance of my tour and headed home to Toledo, but not before making one last genealogical visit to the Arkham Historical Society. Hello? Hello, Mr. Peabody.
Yes. Oh, you must be Mr. Phillips.
Yes, quite correct. Yes. Do you recognize my voice from our phone conversation?
Oh, well, not so much that as a certain look about your face. You have a faint, though distinct, family appearance. When you've been doing this as long as I have, why, it comes quite easily.
And I take it you've completed the research we discussed.
Oh, my, yes. When you told me your grandmother was Eliza Orne of Arkham, born in 1867, I heard a little bell ringing. Took me a while to find the correct reference, but it was right here, right in this old volume. Did you know that your grandmother's father, Benjamin Orne, that would be, caused something of a local scandal right after the Civil War by marrying an orphan girl from New Hampshire?
No, it's the first time I've ever heard of it.
Ah, yes, it was apparently a sensation at the time. Seems the young bride's ancestry was very puzzling. She hailed from Essex County, but was educated in France, and never knew much about her own family.
Oh. What was her family name?
Oh, dear me, well, of course, I meant to tell you right away. It was, Marsh.
Marsh?
Yes. She was the natural daughter of some Marsh of prominence. They say she had those very distinctive Marsh family eyes. You seem to have a tiny suggestion of it yourself. I noticed that right away.
A shadow.
There is a shadow.
A shadow over Innsmouth. Innsmouth.
I put Mr. Peabody's foolish observations out of mind. They're in the middle of July. Just a year after my Innsmouth experience, I paid a visit to my late mother's family in Cleveland. Their house had always depressed me, for it was there that I often visited my Arkham-born grandmother during my youth. I recall that she always seemed strange to me, and I could not think I grieved when she disappeared. I was 8 when they say she wandered off in grief after the suicide of her eldest son, my Uncle Douglas. It was in the attic of her house that Uncle Walter and I uncovered a box of Uncle Douglas's notes, letters, photographs, and heirlooms.
Ah, yes, this is the box, the one I've been telling you about.
I'm very anxious to see the photographs. I don't remember Uncle Douglas or my grandmother very well.
Well, the pictures are on the bottom. We'll get to those shortly. Take a look at this first.
What's this? What, a lock of her hair, some jewelry she wore?
Well, it's something she owned and enjoyed looking at. I don't think she ever wore it, at least not in public.
Yeah, Rhea.
Zulu, Fatan.
Yeah.
What is it?
Ah, here we go. Just look at the workmanship in this piece. It's some sort of tiara, meant to be worn in a woman's hair. Isn't the little row of fish designs amazing? Look how they're shaped.
Uncle Walter, quick, the photograph. I must see my grandmother's photograph.
Ah, well, yes, it's down here someplace. Ah, this is it here. This is what the grand lady looked like. I think this was taken about a month before she disappeared.
No! No! My own great-grandmother had been a Marsh. And the photograph of her own daughter bore the unmistakable evidence of the Innsmouth look. Was Captain Obed Marsh my own great-great-grandfather? And what was it so many had said about the shape of my own eyes? The curator in Arkham, the crazed drunkard at Innsmouth, even the grocery boy had mentioned it. And why, I ask, did my Uncle Douglas commit suicide? I've begun to have dreams. Dreams in which great watery spaces open before me and I wander out through titanic sunken labyrinths and weedy cycloptean walls with grotesque fishes as my companions. Then the other shapes appear, filling me with nameless horror. I've given up my day job and assumed the static life of an invalid each morning, studying the mirror with mounting alarm as I see that I come more and more to resemble my shadowed ancestors. I've acquired the Innsmouth look.
Yeah, Rhea. Yeah.
In my dreams, I meet my grandmother under the sea, where she lives in a phosphorescent palace of many terraces, with gardens of strangely leprous corals.
I have changed, child, as you will change also, and neither of us will ever die. For 80,000 years did my own grandmother, the Thylee, live here in the depths of Ilhanile. And it was here that she returned to after Obed Marsh died. Our kingdom was not destroyed when the Upper Earthmen launched death into the sea. Damaged, but not destroyed. The magic city of the Old Ones lives on. The Deep Ones can never fall, never be destroyed. Never be destroyed. Never.
I feel draw towards the unknown sea depths. I do not believe I need to wait for the full change as most have waited. Stupendous and unheard of splendors await me below, and I shall seek them soon. Yeah!
Rilia, Cthulhu, tonight, tonight I shall swim out to the rocky sanctuary of Devil Reef, and from there I shall dive down through the black abysses to Cyclopean and many-colored Yathnie. And there in that lair of the Deep Ones, I shall dwell amid wonders and glory forever. 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 Yeah! Really? Yeah! Cthulhu! Fatan! Yeah! 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 Really? Cthulhu! Fatan! Cthulhu! Fatan! Cthulhu! Fatan!
There is a shadow.
A shadow over.
Innsmouth.
Innsmouth.
Innsmouth. Innsmouth.
The Shadow over Innsmouth.
By Howard Phillips Lovecraft.
Was adapted for audio by Thomas E. Fuller and Gregory Nickel.
And featured the voices of...
Earl Boykin.
Thomas E. Fuller.
Bill Jackson.
Doug Kay.
Joyce Lee.
Lee Millman.
Gregory Nickel.
And Brad Strickland.
The director was Thomas E. Fuller.
Production and soundscaping was by Henry Howard of Audiocraft Studios.
The Shadow over Innsmouth was recorded live at DragonCon 89 and is a production of the Atlanta Radio Theater.
This performance is copyright 1993 by the Atlanta Radio Theater Company.
ARTC.org.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.